28. Ramiel. I wasn't a storyteller in life. That much I remember. No matter the stories in me, my people needed strong arms, not words. Scholars and soldiers are natural allies, though few ever recognize it. Both worship at invisible altars, one of knowledge, one of duty. It takes a certain kind of soul to protect the invisible, to protect an idea. Librarian Ibukin of Ishe, 886 CE. Hellhounds, despite their canine appearance, were not deterred by thunder. The air crackled all around Rami, and the blade grew heavy in his hands as he moved, extending his sphere of reach ever farther to drive the creatures back from their prey. Then, a reprieve. The moment Claire fell back through the ward, the hellhounds stopped. They sniffed the air, ignored Rami's feints completely, and melted back into the night. Their absence underlined the stillness of stone, rapidly cooling in the evening air. Rami glanced behind, but the librarian and her rescue had disappeared into the city. Rami leaned on his longsword a moment, breathing heavily. It had been a long time since he'd needed to raise his sword against anything, let alone against a foe like a hellhound. He drew another staggered breath. When he finally turned, he could see only Uriel's back. She was hunched over the crumbling stone railing that marked the end of the bridge. It was crumbling more by the moment, as she slowly ground her fist into the cornice.
What was that?
The words growled out of Rami's chest, and he found himself having to stop, take another heaving breath, and clamp down on the frozen horror sitting in his chest. Uriel still hadn't turned, so Rami tried again, pleading this time.
Uriel, that was cold-blooded. You've gone too far.
That brought her around. The archangel lurched toward him. The anger on her severe face didn't surprise him. The tears did.
Don't talk to me about too far, Ramiel of the Fallen. Not when you practically leapt to defend a demon. The librarian is not a demon. That was a human soul you just unleashed hellhounds on for no good reason. They were under our protection, you. They have their god. Why should they be protected?
All confidence and command were gone, leaving the jagged edge of misery behind.
Why should they have anything? The creator is gone. Gone! She has abandoned us, and that snake has the only means to bring her back.
Uriel's ragged voice bounded off the stone and broke. A shriveling feeling crept under Rami's lungs. The collar of Uriel's coat fluttered. A smear of dust flinched up one side of her cheek, stopping just short of the glow of fury-banked eyes. Uriel was fastidious. She would never have tolerated dirt on her face. But her hands came up not to wipe it away, but to knot in agony in her hair. Uriel was the face of God to all. But to Rami, she'd become more. She'd become the face of home. The face of hope. The hope of returning. The hope of welcome. The hope of rest. She was shattering, bleeding violence at every jagged edge, and Rami's hope bled with it. The cost was too high. He couldn't follow this. An angel with a thirst for vengeance. No, not again. He'd already seen the devastation that caused. He couldn't go down that path again. Even if that path was the only one that led him home. He would say it was like a closing door, but the gates of heaven had never been open for him. Instead, a dull certainty welled in his chest, and with it, a realization. Rami found himself reaching out a hand, but the tremors marked Uriel's shoulders like delicate earthquakes. He dropped his hand.
Why do you really need the Codex, Uriel?
For the Creator, you fool. For...
Uriel stopped, glaring sightlessly at the warded city through her tears. The Archangel went quiet.
I can't do it for much longer, Rami.
None of the host can. I don't know why we ever thought we could. Running things. It's all falling apart.
Fear deepened Uriel's flawless face. Lines etched where none had been. Not in the ages since the birth of the world. Shadows in a being of light were far, far out of his experience. All of this was. Rami was used to falling, to running, to wandering. Not this.
I don't know what else would bring her home,
Uriel whispered. There would be no answer that way. The creator was a god, not a lost house cat. She would not be tempted back by a bit of warm milk left outside the door. Wherever she was, if she even was, she was exactly where she wanted to be. The creator was lost, and so was Ramiel's way home. But he wasn't as strong as the creator. He couldn't turn away, even now, not without another path presented to him. So instead, his mind numbly reached for what it knew best. Duty. The Codex was an obvious danger, and they couldn't risk it in the hands of a demon like Andras, especially with the creator absent. He sheathed his sword so as not to look at her.
What would you have of me now?
Duty. Service. It was an all-curing elixir for angels, especially angels like Uriel. The tracks on her face dried. She seemed to sew the broken edges of her mask together piece by piece. She drew up straight, and her gaze came to rest on the spot where Andras had disappeared.
Our prey has split.
The demon is intent on taking the pages to the library, so I will make the necessary preparations for hell. You will track the humans. It's what you're best at. The hounds will leave a wide enough path. Perhaps they will lead us to the Codex. Rami strained to keep the uncertainty off his face.
And then?
And then,
Uriel paused to marshal her own sword. She stared at the blackened spot where it had been planted in the cobblestone.
Then all of hell will have its reckoning.
29. Leto. Earth is freckled with belief, positively pockmarked with it. No great idea fades from the planet without leaving a mark, and we dwell in the craters. We rely on these old lines and cracks to conduct our business, but watch out. Belief changes, and so do the doorways. Walk through the wrong one, and it won't want to let you go. Librarian Claire Hadley, 1994 CE.
Leto was remembering things about his life. Mostly he was remembering that he hated running. His side had stitched up, morphing into an angry hot pinch that twisted his lungs every time he inhaled. His pulse thudded fast and thick in his head. His feet were numb from slapping bare stone, and that made him clumsy as he clambered up and down the broken tunnel passage. Catacombs, Beatrice had said, and Leto had imagined some stately mausoleum, perhaps a stone building, statues artfully crumbling here and there, coincidentally lit with a mysterious torch like they were in the movies. But this was something entirely different. It was a hole in the ground that forgot to stop. It was a crooked path daggered with roots and stone and other objects that Leto tried not to consider too closely as he tripped over them. Bare crevices had been cut out of the dirt walls and held scattered bones and bits of cloth. All of this was illuminated not by thoughtful torches, but by his single flashlight, splashing quivering light around as he ran. It was a place, most important, that Leto very much did not want to die in. So he ran, scrabbling at dirt and stone and cowering every time a shower of dust fell from overhead. The others had set out to create a diversion outside the ward to draw off the hellhounds long enough for Leto to get to the realm gate via a second path. Claire assured him she would be fine and would catch up with him later in the realm beyond the gates. All Leto had to do was keep moving.
Leto hadn't believed a word of it. He'd been around the librarian enough by now to see her fear. But it was his own fear, his own shameful, crippling terror at the sound of the hellhounds,
that had made him nod. It was his fear that agreed to the plan. He'd meant to follow her forward, he'd said. But instead, his courage had failed him yet again and left him here, hurtling through the dark. He hadn't told all that to Beatrice. The unwritten woman had not been happy when Leto finally relayed Claire's plan. She'd been distressed enough when Claire and the others had left, but when Leto explained that Claire had been suspicious of Andrus and had asked Leto to carry the Codex pages to Hell, Beatrice had flown into a barely contained panic. She'd stormed around the apartment and seemed quite ready to bolt after the others, until Leto had added something. That Claire had said to get him through the gate, then check the outer ward for the others, just in case. Well, he'd said that was what she'd said. He'd improvised, ashamed of leaving Claire and Hero to do the hard part. The least he could do was send Beatrice as backup. Beatrice hadn't needed convincing. She had regrets, too. Hanging around unwritten authors had taught Leto a lot about the words one didn't say. They'd gotten to the cramped entrance, hidden in the sewers not far from the fountain he'd seen earlier, when Beatrice's conscience caught up with her. She stopped abruptly at the door. Her hands flew to her head and she grunted.
I can't do this. Not again.
But Claire said to get the pages to the gate first.
I can't leave her to face the consequences alone. Not again.
Beatrice's hands fisted in her hair before dropping, still clenched with tension. She seemed to come to a decision.
I'm going after her. You can make it from here. Now listen closely.
Leto repeated Beatrice's instructions in his head. Follow the tunnel. Veer right when it splits. Keep going no matter what. He'd been going for a while now and was surely outside the walls, outside the ward. But being underground among the dead would confuse and slow the hellhounds, Beatrice had said. Not long enough to save him if it came to that, but long enough for him to run, which was the important thing, to run. When Leto reached the end, Beatrice said he would see the realm gate. If there was an end, Leto hadn't found it. He began to worry he'd missed a right turn somewhere in the dark. He took another aimless corner and was about to consider turning back when a stone outcropping caught him on the shoulder. Stone in the shape of a fist. A hand slammed Leto against a wall and his flashlight flew out of his grasp. Leto's head jolted against hard-packed dirt, and stars briefly dazzled the dark. When they cleared, he couldn't see anything, at first. Slowly, two pricks of gold light resolved out of the darkness. A gem-shaped light flared, stabbing painfully at his eyes, and Andrus's face melted into view.
Hello, stray.
The demon had shed all previous pretense in the dark, keeping only gaunt features, harsh and cutting edges. A sharp-toothed smile split a skull-like face, and the shadows danced wildly as he adjusted his grip. Cold, bony fingers squeezed Leto's throat closed. The fingers constricted again and slammed Leto's head against the wall. Pain flickered from a spark to wildfire. Everything went gray this time. When Leto could open his eyes again, Andrus was shuffling through his pockets. He had located the folded sheaves of parchment in Leto's suit. There was no more explanation. Andrus simply took what he wanted. Leto struggled even as the world tilted hazily around him. But Andrus batted his hand aside easily and tucked the codex pages in his own pocket. He made a tutting noise under his breath.
This is mine. As is this. See?
Andrus held up a thick gem set into the small dagger that he'd offered to the ravens. That seemed like ages ago. It glittered, matching all the other gems and ornaments pinned to Andrus's clothing. Leto had assumed it was for show, some old-fashioned vanity, but now he saw how wrong he was. Each bauble glimmered independent of the light. Relics from the arcane wing, he realized. In the dim light of another gem, Leto couldn't make out the color or cut. The dagger handle in Andrus's palm pulsed with energy. Something moved and bubbled beneath the stone surface, like a predator in deep water. Leto recoiled without thinking, earning a chuckle from the demon.
A simple soul gem. Perhaps you recognize it. It's a cousin of the ghostlight. It also latches onto a dead soul. But this one consumes.
Leto couldn't tell if the movement in the stone was increasing or if it was just a trick of the wildly flickering light. He tried to pull away out of instinct. A claw-like thumbnail caught under Leto's throat, pressing until the skin was taut. A pleased chuckling sound came from the demon.
I could have used this against you, against all of you at any moment during our time together. I didn't, for Claire's sake. I want you to tell Claire that. Give my pup a message. Tell her to stay away from the library.
Leto bit his teeth together to stifle a whimper as Andrus drew a thin line of blood on his neck where he pressed down. Leto worked his throat, holding himself still as he tried to speak around the claws in his skin.
You won't win. You aren't a librarian. You're not even human.
Of course not. I have no intention of administering the library. What would be the point?
Andrus's tone turned silky and dark.
But the court is always hungry. That will secure what I do want. I'll have it all.
You can't—
Leto cut off as a claw broke the skin at his neck again.
Now, now, lesson time is over. None of this needs to get messy if you remember your message for Claire. But I need to ensure it carries the proper gravitas. It would be wise to hold still, child.
The medallion in Andrus's hand burst into sickly orange light. Leto began to struggle, ignoring the claws sinking into his neck. And then he began to scream.
Merciful Jesus.
The oath floated through Leto's sluggish head. He couldn't place the low feminine voice. His eyes fluttered open and he momentarily panicked when he saw only darkness. Then a light flared and it came back to him. The catacombs, the tunnel, Andrus.
The codex!
Leto jerked, but a cool hand stopped him.
Easy, Leto. Hero, give me a hand here. Help him up. We have to keep moving.
Claire's voice hovered somewhere to his left. Larger hands gripped his arm, and there was a grunt as he was hauled to his feet.
Up you go, kid.
The movement brought the sensations of his body flooding back to him. Hot pain shuddered up his limbs, pulling a jagged sound from his throat, and Leto would have collapsed again without Hero's support.
Gently help him up. Did I really have to specify that?
Claire's voice was sharp, even as a cool hand checked his cheek and ran down his shoulder, inspecting wounds.
Be a little more light.
The flashlight swung around and seemed to pierce Leto's skull, but he was finally able to make out the faces above him. Hero and Claire clustered to either side, and Beatrice was a tall, dark shape hovering behind them. Claire scowled thunderclouds at Hero, who was keeping him upright.
You said we were in a hurry.
Nonetheless, Hero loosened his grip slightly and glanced at him.
You all right to walk, kid?
I think so.
After the initial wave, the pain faded to a bone-deep ache. Most of the pain, that is. Leto winced.
I think I broke my arm.
Claire's hand drifted to the injured arm. Leto managed to make only a mangled squeak as she probed it. Her voice was taut.
I doubt you broke it. You'll be all right just as soon as we get to the library.
She hesitated.
Andrus did this?
Leto nodded. The glint of claw and gem came back in a rush. The loss. The crush of codex pages in a jeweled fist. He found a lump had developed in his throat and he had to swallow hard.
He got the pages. I failed. I'm so sorry.
Claire started waving her hand before he even got the apology out.
Not unexpected. We can deal with it. I'm just glad you're alive. We'll just—
The earth walls around them lurched, showering clods on their heads. Baleful howls vibrated from afar, but not far enough. Without a word, Beatrice began shoving Claire down the hall. Hero hauled Leto into a stumbling pace.
"We'll just run, that's what," Hero finished.
He shot a grim look at Beatrice.
"How much farther?"
"Nearly there."
Every step made his arm shoot with electric bolts of pain, but Leto forced his feet to keep up with Hero. They turned another corner. Leto heard a strangled yelp, and Beatrice brought the flashlight up to show Claire backing away from a dark ledge. The tunnel emptied out onto an abrupt precipice. The light did not reach far, but wind whipped at the edges of Claire's skirts. Leto could feel the enormous space in front of them. Claire snatched the flashlight from Beatrice's hand and craned her head. The light disappeared into aimless darkness above them. But when Claire swung the beam down, it hit on something white. Leto leaned forward as far as he dared to peer over the ledge. Far, far below them, the light bounced off dull ivory surfaces. Like seashells. An ocean of seashells. It took Leto's brain a moment to accept that the shells were in fact the humankind. "A mass burial," Claire breathed. She swung the light up into Beatrice's face.
"A dead end. Is there a way across?"
"In a manner of speaking."
Beatrice looked uncomfortable.
"What?"
Claire's eyes widened.
"This is the Realm Gate?"
Beatrice opened her mouth, but her explanation was drowned in another hail of dirt. A clear howl came from the depths of the catacombs now. Closer. Much closer. The hellhounds had their scent, and though the ancient catacombs had slowed them down, it wouldn't be for long. Leto edged nervously toward Claire. Beatrice leaned over the ledge.
"You have to jump, right here."
She indicated a spot in the air square off the precipice, and somewhere below them.
"The hell I do," Claire muttered.
"It's a burial rite, Claire, the path to the afterlife. The religion might be long dead, but still,
we don't have time to debate."
Beatrice practically shouted and stepped forward as if she was going to push them both. Claire brought up her flashlight like a club, and Hero drew his gun. Beatrice stopped.
"You have to trust me."
Claire's lip curled. "Oh no, I made that mistake once."
"I'll do it."
The words were out of Leto's mouth before he thought them through. He could feel the immense weight of the hellhounds as they materialized in and out of the tunnel, shoving waves of air and dust in front of them. He ached everywhere the air hit him, and he just wanted it to stop, wanted not to feel as broken, as useless as he did in front of Andrus. He wanted the fear to stop, and he wanted to make a difference.
"I'll jump first."
"Absolutely not."
Claire reached out for his good arm. But without debate, without fanfare, without even permission, Leto walked into open air. And the darkness had him. 30. Leto.
"Realms can die. I said that before. It's rare because humans love nothing more than holding on to an idea, worrying it in their teeth until it's shaped into something else. But it happens occasionally. When a realm loses access to dreams and imagination, it starves. It's not a gentle death. A realm will attempt to preserve itself, feed itself on any unwary dream, any stray soul that wanders into its maw."
Librarian Gregor Henry, 1980 CE. Sand clogged his tongue and rasped against his teeth. He couldn't breathe. Panic flared. The sand reached into his throat and threatened to draw bile. Leto came to consciousness coughing and then bolted into a sitting position. He doubled over, forcing a startling amount of silt from his mouth. When his eyes stopped watering, he found he was sprawled on a wide shore. Silty gray sand stretched in either direction as far as he could see, salted with a scruff of reeds and dunes that sloped down to a flat, strangely still sea. Not a sea, Leto thought, as his eyes adjusted to the light. The water was a dusty mirror, still but streaked with brown and algae.
He squinted across to just make out a skim of pale gray that indicated land on the other side. A river. A dead river. To his right was a particularly starved patch of reeds, and it was from this that Claire rose with a squawk.
No warning about that impact. I will murder her. I don't care if she's my own book. I will—
She stopped, frowning as she picked tiny seeds out of her skirts.
Can I not stay clean for 1 hour?
Leto grinned despite himself, but there was a groan behind him before he could respond. Hero rolled up and with grim distaste retrieved his boot from a puddle. He shook it out and glanced toward Claire.
At least a nap seems to have returned someone's sense of spirit.
Claire was getting better at ignoring Hero, it seemed. She turned a critical eye on Leto.
Everyone all right?
I think so.
Leto rubbed the back of his head. The moment when he hit the invisible gate had been a queer jumble, rattling his senses around like pebbles in a can. His arm was still broken, protesting movement, but he could wiggle his fingers, and his aches were less painful in this realm. Bodies were distant things.
Where are we?
Very good question. Claire stopped fuming over her dress long enough to survey the area. Not a realm I'm familiar with. River, sand, reeds. An old pagan culture. Not Greek.
Egyptian? Oh, please, let it be Duat. We'll have fast passage back to the library with help from the librarians there. And they have an excellent poetry collection.
Claire's eyes lit up, and she began to mutter what sounded like a bibliography to herself as she inspected the waterline. Behind them, a strange dark arch loomed across the interminable sand. It was as if a circle of obsidian had been buried there by a wayward giant. Leto approached and leaned closer to inspect it. A flicker of white in the black material made him jerk back. The interior of the arch wasn't opaque, he realized. It was the darkness of the underground chamber they'd just left, the other side of the gate. Leto ran a hand experimentally over it, but the surface was solid and unforgiving. The sound from the other side was muted, but he could still hear the howling of the hounds. Nothing stirred in the dark frame, though. No light, no gleam of Beatrice's aluminum bat. Leto said lowly to Hero,
Beatrice?
Hero winced and shook his head slowly. Leto's stomach did a flip-flop. He cast a nervous glance back. Claire turned her head down. The curtain of her hair didn't hide the injured curl of her shoulders.
Dead?
Claire's voice was hollow. Hero hesitated.
I don't know. The hellhounds should have stopped when you dragged us through.
The distant sound of barking from the other side of the arch said they hadn't gone back to hell, at least. Claire stared sightlessly at the sand a moment, then nodded slowly to herself. The pinch of concern on Hero's face deepened.
There's a chance that she—
Enough.
Claire cleared her throat and straightened to look toward the water.
Let's figure out our way across this then, shall we?
Claire wasn't heartless. Leto knew that well enough by now. But as unflinchingly practical as she was to everyone else, she reserved the tightest reins for herself. Leto wondered if anyone else bothered to look closely enough to see the strain. He could see it now, the tick in her jaw, the way her shoulders trembled just a flicker, before setting themselves hard against the world. She'd been taking care of Leto all this time, caring for him like a lost child. He ached to do something to ease the way for her. Something. Anything. Hero exchanged a long look with Leto before following her down through the reeds.
Not to put a damper on the day at the beach, but what happens if we do manage to return to hell? Andrus already has the pages and a head start on... whatever.
Leto remembered Andrus's words.
He wants the library.
Claire seemed unsurprised. She crossed her arms.
He wants more than that, I suspect. He wants the court.
The court?
Hell's court of demons, dukes, princes, the whole pit of vipers. Claire made a face of distaste. Andrus was a duke of some influence once. He was overthrown in a coup centuries ago. Infernal politics. I thought time had healed that insult, but I was wrong. I knew he was unusually interested in the Codex. I thought it might lead to some pissing match over its curation, but I could deal with that easily enough when we got back. I never thought... Claire kicked a reed, abusing it with the toe of her sneaker.
But why the library? Hero asked.
Claire frowned down at the plant. I'm not certain.
He said something about, you know who, Leto said.
Lucifer's our ruler, not a dark wizard, Leto. You can say his name, Claire muttered. He said he wanted to use the books as collateral, to buy his way back into power. But he has to assume that Lucifer will not tolerate that. Even if he has the Codex, I can't see...
Unless he knew something he wasn't telling me.
Claire stopped with a growl in her throat. Demons, angels, politics ruins everything.
Right, sorry, I just...
Leto waited until Claire left her tormented reeds behind and met his gaze.
Andrus had something. A soul gem, he called it. He said he could have used it, but didn't, if we stay away.
It hung in the air a moment. The possibility of retreating. Leto saw that twitch again. That strain under pressure ignored. Claire shook her head, and his chest ached. The old man never did understand.
Leto might have a point, Hero spoke up. He could already have won and have something unpleasant waiting.
He won't have the books. Brevity is there, and the library is not without its own humble defenses. I won't risk the books or Brev to Andrus's plans. We'll get back the pages. She kicked a broken reed into the water. Assuming we can leave. The reed barely cleared the surface when a froth of sound drew their attention. Claire leapt back from the bank as the water churned, turning from slate to muddy black. A knobby, elongated skull the size of a small island broke the surface. Green and silver veins mottled the skin, contrasting with the flat, black, bulbous eyes embedded at the top of a long snout. It reminded Leto vaguely of a crocodile, but he didn't remember the creatures on Earth being so monstrous. The creature regarded them, the only movement coming from the filthy water beating down its snout. Claire glanced at Hero and Leto before clearing her throat and stepping forward. She drew up her dignity, and it almost obscured her bedraggled hair and sand-caked legs.
Greetings. We are envoys from...
Be judged.
Leto nearly startled off his feet. It was not so much a voice that had spoken, but an assault of concept. Something had ripped open his skull and shoved the essence of the words directly into his brain, jumbling all thoughts of his own. The words had no voice, no tenor, no personality, just the power of age and a hunger that was never refused. They pulsed through his head for several breaths, until finally easing into a thudding headache. The shudder that whipped through Hero and Claire said they'd received the same treatment. Hero's hand flew to his side, where his gun had returned to its form as a fine sword. Claire shot him an alarmed look and shook her head until his hand dropped away again. Claire straightened into her librarian demeanor, shoulders back, spine straight, chin tilted so she could fix her gaze on whatever held her disdain. But she eyed the crocodile creature with new caution, and Leto caught her fingers making nervous little taps at her skirts as she tried again.
You mistake me. We are not the dead seeking judgment. I am the head librarian of the unwritten wing in Hell's Library. We happened here while on Hell's business. Can I know what realm we've entered?
Be refused.
Claire flinched. Then may I speak to your master?
Be refused.
Then what god or pantheon rules this place?
Be lost.
You have no god? Or no god currently? Claire asked.
Pain jabbed Leto's head with each answer. It was becoming the worst game of 20 questions he'd experienced.
Be lost.
Your god is the god of loss, or... Oh. Claire fell quiet. Your gods died with their believers. I hadn't thought a realm could remain after that. Leto considered. They'd seen Valhalla, and the only things he associated Norse gods with were superhero movies and those racist assholes on the internet. But Valhalla survived by evolving into something more in line with the legend than with the religion. It existed, if skewed slightly by the pop culture fantasies. If Valhalla thrived and these gods had died, then this had to be a place older and more forgotten than he could imagine. He swallowed nervously, and the very air tasted different on his tongue. Different from Valhalla or Hell or anywhere previous. No smell, for one. Not the anise and ash of Hell, nor the pine and stone of Valhalla. It felt empty. It echoed across the empty space inside Leto, and he shivered. He'd felt better inch by inch since talking with Claire. The time in Mdina had been a human time for all its horror. He'd felt the empty blackness shrink, but it wasn't gone. Perhaps it never would be. It was one thing Claire couldn't protect him from. But maybe he could protect her. Claire tried again. We simply need passage to Hell, or the closest realm to it. We can leave you in peace.
Be judged.
We are not in need of judgment. Some of us aren't even human. Claire flung a hand in Hero's direction. But the crocodile did not so much as blink, though it quieted a moment before responding.
Be passed.
Yes, passage, finally. Claire crossed her arms. I assume there is some price for passage? Waves shuddered up the beach as the head suddenly moved. Reptilian skin flexed, and the head rose slightly as its great jaws opened, sending them all backing up a step. Leto flinched, expecting great rows of teeth or even the blood-red spikes that filled Walter's mouth. But the contents of the creature's mouth made him blink. Suspended between its jaws, held by no support that he could see, was an oversized metal structure. It was dark bronze and consisted of two platforms connected by a lever. A tiny puff of white sat on one platform. A feather. A bronze chain shifted slightly with the sway of the wind, producing a tinkle that sent a shiver over Leto's skin.
Are those scales?
Hero identified it under his breath. Claire stiffened, staring at the construction as if she would have preferred a jaw full of teeth and snakes. When she glanced back at them, Leto saw that all warmth had drained from her brown face. She turned her head again and shook it hard enough to send the tiny braids in her hair flying. No, Claire whispered. Then louder,
no, you have no authority to judge us. Our souls
be judged.
No!
Claire's voice couldn't match the command of words in their heads, but the tremble in her shoulders said she was trying. Leto didn't understand what was significant about the scales. They'd had to prove themselves in Valhalla, and Claire had been willing, if reluctant, to comply to gain entry, but this was different. It was a difference that unnerved Claire and sent a well of foreboding through him. There was no time to ask as Claire spun, heel digging into the sand. She scrambled back up the beach toward them.
What? Burn this place. We're leaving.
And going where, exactly? Hero asked.
Back to Mdina. We'll get back inside the walls. Figure something else out.
Back to the hellhound's teeth, you mean?
Hero's voice was harsh.
At least we have a chance with them. Better than piss and harpies!
The oath came out with the force of surprise. Claire jerked to a halt as they approached the black arch. It was no longer dark. The cavern they'd just left was lit by strange globes of light. The field of bones was now fully illuminated like ghastly cobblestones, and at the center of the arch, just on the other side of the flat, dark surface, was the angel in a gray trench coat, Ramiel. Claire, rather than concerned, was incensed. She accelerated, stalking up the sand, leaving Hero and Leto no choice but to follow. She got her nose up to the arch. Ramiel watched her expressionlessly, and Claire gave a mockery of a smile.
Trouble with the lock, Angel?
Some.
Ramiel stepped to the side and motioned with his hand.
Perhaps you could come across and show me the trick of it.
Claire cast a glance back at the waiting monster and the scales behind them before responding.
After which I'm sure you would offer to hold off the hounds and allow us to be on our way.
He shook his head slowly.
I'm sorry, librarian. Uriel.
My superior acted in haste.
But my duty is to ensure you do not interfere.
Do you always do your duty, Watcher?
Ramiel gave no reaction. Claire turned away abruptly to confer with Hero and Leto a few paces away.
He won't be getting through. Beatrice had me to pull Hero through, so if I don't miss my guess, you need a mortal soul to enter. But we need a way past him.
I could challenge him, Hero suggested,
but Claire shook her head.
He's a Watcher, one of the originals.
She raised her eyes to the crocodile scales again.
Our last hero may have died getting us this far. I won't have any more foolish sacrifices today.
What do the scales do? Leto asked.
They weigh the purity of a soul.
Claire's face was grim.
This realm must have had influences from Egypt. Maybe a splinter cult, or even a predecessor.
It's not Duat.
If it were, there'd be a bunch of other monster-headed creatures here ready to record judgment and be much more sensible.
There were rules about these things, but the symbolism is easy enough to assume. The feather represents goodness, purity of spirit. If your soul does not shift the scales, you can pass into their realm. If it's heavier, the crocodile god will likely consume you.
Leto frowned.
And you, what, die again?
Claire shook her head. I know this is a hard concept to wrap your head around, but there are worse states for your soul than death. It's like the hellhounds, or the words I told you I spoke to banished librarian Gregor. I don't know what the scales do, but it would be nothing good. A soul may not die, but cease to exist.
That's not so bad, Leto muttered before he realized he'd said it. He looked up to see Hero and Claire staring at him with matching alarm.
I mean, no, not us, of course. I meant...
He stopped, not sure what he'd meant. But the terrible thought had come to him too fast to be one he hadn't had before. An echo of a memory tugged at him. Chalk-white stars, exhaustion and despair. He'd made this choice before. Cold pooled in his stomach.
Claire scrutinized Leto before shaking her head. It's beside the point. I suspect the creature has no real interest in finding us worthy. Without a god to rule the realm or believers to nourish it, it likely hasn't had a good meal in eons. It's half dead and starved. We are not going to be the ones to feed it. I'm going to go see if I can make the cursed angel see sense. Stay put, both of you.
They nodded and watched the librarian stalk back to the arch. Hero clasped Leto's shoulder and squeezed as he looked up and down the featureless beach.
We'll figure something out, kid.
We will,
Leto nodded. But his eyes were reserved for the dark bronze scales. He thought of the promise he'd made to Claire, the debt he owed her. The darkness in the pit of his stomach that would never quite be banished. He thought of the feeling of falling through the gate, the weightless way the world turned quiet. It had felt welcome. It had felt familiar. He'd already made this choice. It made sense. Death was the way you traveled between realms. The echo of the Raven Roads had never really left him, but he wasn't panicking now. Like the tumblers turning in a lock, everything fell into place inside him. He studied the glimmering sheen of the platforms, the whiteness of the feather, and the shadowy hollow of the crocodile's jaws beyond. 31. Ramiel. First of all, realms are proud. Realms are proud and vain creations. Never forget that. Realms are too proud to bow to your wee ideas of physics and common sense. A realm doesn't have to make sense to its inhabitants. Do not expect a realm to conform to your logic, not if you want to escape with your mind intact. Realms are beholden to one thing and one thing only, the inertia of their belief. Anything can happen in service to a story. Librarian Bjorn the Bard, 1673 CE. What is a story without want, without desire, without need? Librarian Gregor Henry, 1896 CE. The librarian approached. Ramiel raised his brows at her, though his eyes made sure to track where her two companions wandered, just at the edge of the gate's vision. It was a disorienting thing. The portal was built into the floor, superimposed over the pile of bones. He had to crouch over it, but Claire walked toward him straight on, as if it were simply a doorway on her side. The effect made his neck stiff. The hellhounds had departed by the time he ventured into the catacombs, though the deep claw marks on the stone signified some struggle had occurred. He noted the librarian was missing the mysterious fourth companion who had pulled her through the ward at the Mdina Bridge. He saw no sign of a body. He could only wonder what the price of their escape had been. That she and her remaining companions had passed through an undocumented afterworld gate was obvious. Uriel said she'd known the gate to every surviving realm on the island, but as soon as he entered the ruins following the Hellhound Trail, it was obvious this one was not accounted for. He located the gate at the bottom of the mass grave fast enough, urged on by the scent of death and loss that swamped the entire catacomb. It resisted as he approached, repulsed by his foreign presence. His vision had allowed him to thin the barrier enough to see and hear, but whatever ritual was required to satisfy the ancient gate was unknown to him. He knew these ruins belonged to a long-dead water god, but the worshippers had died out long before. As long as he had them cut off from escape, he was doing his duty. If the way out of the strange realm was barred in front of them, they would have to come out soon enough. So, your duty, the librarian crossed her arms. Your duty to ensure we don't interfere, meaning that the moment we cross back over, you detain us. In one piece, if we're lucky? Rami raised his chin.
I can swear you'll be treated with the mercy and justice of heaven.
Is that the same justice that turned the hounds on us once we were no longer a bargaining chip? I don't believe I have the stomach for your justice, Ramiel.
Damn Uriel and her madness.
You can trust? You've given me no reason to trust.
Claire cut him off with a sharp hand wave.
How can you simply stand there and do nothing while demonic forces overtake the library?
It was a disingenuous argument at best. Rami shrugged.
It's in hell. Aren't demons always in the library?
You don't know what chaos Andras is willing to unleash to get his title back.
She shook her head.
Haven't you ever heard the saying, better the devil you know?
I have tried not to know more than I have to.
Strikes me you had more occasion to know the man in charge than I have,
Claire said. Rami bit down hard on a curse. But she knew her history. He'd followed Lucifer when they'd fallen, abandoned heaven. Not because he agreed with him or believed in the cause. Rami was not as ambitious as that. But because he was a watcher. One of the old ones first sent to aid and teach the Creator's fledgling creation on Earth. He'd taken that duty seriously. And when man suffered, when Rami's charges were dying in droves for lack of food or an abundance of disease that they lacked the knowledge to resist, the Watchers had taught them how to survive.
The Creator had deemed it forbidden knowledge, and so the Watchers had followed Lucifer when the gates of heaven shut forever behind them. It had been the first time he'd seen what the madness of angels could lead to. Rami had never regretted the cause of the fall, though the result had not sat well with him. He'd lingered, watching Lucifer bandy his forces and establish a domain of his own. But he wasn't an empire builder. He wasn't a leader. His heart was still with his duty, the humans on Earth. Not as pawns in a feudal war with heaven, but as creatures with budding potential that could be protected. He hadn't always done a good job of it. Doubting, wandering over the next millennia. But it had been the only path that made sense to him. Until Uriel had offered him the position in Purgatory. Until a strange little accountant had walked up to his bench and dropped in his lap a problem that caught Heaven's eye. Until Uriel had revealed her bloodlust. Until a librarian decided to show a stubborn sense of honor and complicated everything. Rami almost found himself wishing for the Purgatory desk again. But then he knew he would not be returning to the gates, no matter how this played out. Rami had only his duty left.
I am no friend of the deceiver. Do not look for sympathies where you will find none.
Rami noted that Claire's companions had stopped in front of the scales in the creature's maw. A furtive argument started. The gangly demon with wild curls. Leto, he remembered. Claire insisted he was human. Gestured wildly at the handsome swordsman, motioning past the monstrous creature in the water. The man appeared upset, a crinkle appearing on his perfect brow. He could have been an angel were it not for the calculating way his gaze flicked to the arch and back. The swordsman shook his head hard and the argument continued. Rami could not hear the words spoken, and Claire's intense displeasure was focused entirely on him, which meant the librarian was not aware of the discussion occurring behind her. Curious. She tapped her fingers on her crossed arms. What if we offered to leave one of us with you, a hostage, a guarantee that we are striking no offense to heaven? Your sadistic partner did seem to enjoy terrifying those she had in her grasp, but if you swear no harm would come to him, I could allow Leto to stay while I set things right. The woman's eyes went distant, concerned. That might actually be the safest place for him. Rami ignored the offer and the opinion of Uriel, but picked up on the worry in her eyes.
Are you certain you're fighting a battle you can win?
The books need protecting. It's my library and I won't relinquish it. But determination drained out of Claire with a breath, leaving behind something gentle and tired. I'm old enough to know the costs of any victory. Behind her, the argument had met a begrudging standoff. The swordsman had resorted to pleading, shaking his head, but the teenage boy seemed set on something. They traded quiet words and shook hands. The teenager asked something, and the taller man, after a long silence, nodded. Then the teenager looked toward Rami, gaze lingering on the librarian's back. It was a look so filled with unspoken ache that Rami was surprised Claire didn't feel it. And then the teenager turned and walked toward the mouth of the beast. He was climbing to the scales, Rami realized. He knew what scales in an afterlife meant. He could read a realm as well as Claire. The boy was submitting his soul for judgment. Rami had seen enough war, enough strife to know the shoulders of defeated men. The exact line of the downturned head of someone who knew his fate and had given up fighting it. The boy knew what the scales would find in his soul. The librarian was not the only one who understood costs, it seemed. What are you? Rami must have betrayed something with his face, because Claire followed his gaze over her shoulder. The teenager had one arm bent against his stomach but held out his other in supplication. The crocodile spirit brought the scales closer. The boy placed his feet carefully on the reptilian lips and left the shore. Claire made a sound as if she'd been struck, then breathed a word.
Don't!
Claire pelted down the beach, but the swordsman took 3 wide steps to intercept her, whipping his arms around her waist. She was practically lifted off her feet as she scrambled at the man holding her back.
Stop! Don't do this!
Claire's voice was jagged, more shattered than Rami had ever heard it. The swordsman bent his head and muttered into her ear soft words that were entirely unheard. The teenager paused, one hand on the scales as he looked behind. From the distance, Rami couldn't make out his precise expression, but the boy raised a calm hand, and then he stepped on the scale. An inhuman howl, half fear, half fury, welled up from the librarian as the scales started to dip. She twisted and dragged them both to the sand as the crocodile god's jaws started to close. The boy held tight to the bronze chains of the scale and seemed to shiver as the shadows of the crocodile's jaw passed over him. Darkness wrapped over his face. The bronze scale glimmered once, twice. Then the scales and the boy were gone. In the silent moment that drew out, as the crocodile god closed its mouth and sank its head back beneath the muddy waters, Rami realized his mouth had dropped open. His chest had gone cold. A thin keen carried over the sand, and Claire collapsed in a mess of skirts and braids, shoulders trembling. The swordsman kept a tight grip on her shoulders as he crouched next to her, as if afraid to let her go lest she attack the crocodile god itself. He made awkward attempts to pat Claire's shoulders, then resorted to drawing her forcibly to her feet. Rami saw why. The crocodile had reoriented upon resurfacing. The boy's soul must have satisfied, for now the great creature surfaced with its closed snout touching the shore. Its body extended, just breaking the surface, until it bridged the entire width of the waters and its impossibly long tail rested on the far shore. The swordsman tried to guide Claire toward it, but the librarian broke free of his grasp with an explosive jerk. She strode back to the arch with a furious speed. Her usual clay complexion was pale, her eyes red from unshed tears. Her cheeks were stubbornly dry, but the grief and the fury that limned her face gave it a fire all its own. Rami clenched the pommel of the sword at his side, half expecting her to burst through the gate and launch herself at him. But Claire stopped just short of the gate, chest heaving.
You did this.
Her words were rough as gravel from crying.
He was innocent and he died because of you. And for that, Watcher, I will remember you. And one day I will bring all of hell upon you.
The swordsman caught up to her and hesitated at her back. Claire didn't wait for a reply. She twisted past her companion and stumbled, taking her broken warpath toward the crocodile bridge. 32. Brevity. War has always followed libraries, my apprentice. History has made no effort to hide that truth from us. Look at Rome, look at the Crusades. Vanquishing an enemy and taking his books was just as strategic as taking his cannons. Books are knowledge, weaponized. And what weapons you cannot steal, you must burn. Librarian Gregor Henry, 1986 CE. During a panic attack, time takes on a liquid nature, stopping and rushing on at once, feeling like each struggling breath stretches out forever like taffy until the bubble bursts and the present cascades down on your head, cold and immediate. Brevity was surrounded by the soothing smells of oak and dust when she came to. A carpet twitched under her toes, and the dribbles of tea stains eventually helped her place the underside of Claire's desk. Big, heavy, secure. There were worse places to hide forever.
She's dead. She's not dead. She's a muse. They're immortal.
Maybe it's a short flavor of immortality, eh? It's her name, isn't it?
Hush, Libby. Aurora said.
3 pairs of feet clustered at the opening of the desk, none of them seeming to go together. Combat boots, scuffed buckle shoes, and one pair of dainty blue hooves. Brevity buried her face in her hands and swallowed a groan.
See, she's alive!
A mop of red curls upended itself over the edge of the desk, and a damsel gave her an upside-down grin.
Welcome back!
God, was that what she was like when Claire complained she was inappropriately cheerful? Brevity might have contemplated hiding, but the bubble had already burst and time pulled her forward again. She allowed the trio to drag her to her feet. Conversation was a shock of water to her senses, not clearing the panic but compressing it, freezing it up into a tiny bundle that caught between her ribs and held, for now. Brevity reached for the first words she could think of that sounded vaguely librarian-ish.
What are you doing out of the suite? We were going to complain about the noise. It's been going on for hours,
the red-haired damsel said. Charlotte, Brevity remembered, taking in the patched dress and scuffed buckle shoes. Probably from one of those Puritan moral historicals where girls were more symbols of something than characters. Purity, sin, life, death. Puritans never did seem to make up their minds about it. Aurora, blue hooves towing the carpet nervously, hung over her shoulder.
What noise?
The question answered itself in a creaking shudder. The library trembled. The lights flickered, though there was no reason for them to. Perhaps just to express the library's displeasure with the situation at hand. Books twitched uneasily in their stacks, and the damsels looked wide-eyed at Brevity. Helplessness, sharp and familiar, welled up again. But Brevity had an audience this time. Audiences helped. Brevity put on her best smile and pretended to find something on Claire's desk that urgently needed straightening.
The wards are up. Just a precaution until Miss Claire gets back.
Her smile was guttered by another violent thunderclap that hung in the air.
That there is probably just annoying old demon roughhousing. You remember Valentine's? Ain't nothing compared to that. If the wards are up, doesn't that mean we're cut off?
It's not like we're going to get written anyway, the second damsel interrupted.
This damsel was short and angry, like a wet cat wrestled into a leather jacket. Her once long blonde hair had been haphazardly shaved, perfect ingenue features pinched into a frown.
Our author's been dead for decades.
It's nothing to worry about,
Brevity jumped in before Charlotte could be hurt by that remark.
Just librarian business. Miss Claire will be back any minute. And wouldn't want to have her catch you outside the suite, yeah?
She shooed the damsels off, ignoring the way Aurora trailed after the other two, a quiet blue shadow that cast long, questioning looks back at Brevity as she went. They'd believed her. Of course they had. It was what the library did. Distant librarians going about their business, keeping the books in their care well and at arm's length. It was the norm Claire had set, and if anyone noticed that it was Brevity, social, flighty, trivial Brevity, trying to fill those shoes now, the damsels were too sweet to say so. The empty spaces between her ribs quivered, but held. Brevity pressed her palms to the desk, feeling the vibration as another impact hit the wards. It was a steady drum now. Something was trying to invade the library. Whether it was because Andrus had lost control of his horrors, or it was some demonic plot to pull the library into the tug-of-war games of Hell's Court, Brevity had no way of knowing, and didn't care. From inside the wards, the library was alone. Alone. The word made Brevity want to crawl back under the desk, but instead she pressed her knuckles into the wood until they stung, and the gilded lines of inspiration on her skin stilled. The capacity for fear was still there, because the unknown was still there. But the damsels had reminded Brevity that imagination wasn't just a weakness, it was a tool. Anxiety could fill up the darkness with all the monsters it wished, but if Brevity tried very hard, maybe she could squeeze in one monster of her own. She was cut off from the world, but she still needed to protect the damsels, keep them in the suite, protect the books. All she needed was an audience. Care for the books, Claire had said. there was at least one book not yet home in the library.